This is Little Snot Dudley, one of the original Dudleys, and you're listening to This Is Extreme.
Beat me if you can, survive if I let you.
Procuring nevermore.
Let the new era begin, the era of the ECW.
Oh my God. Greetings, ECW fans, and welcome to This Is Extreme, an ECW history podcast. Thank you for joining us and listening to us. We have a very special guest on today's show. It is one of the three original Dudley brothers in ECW. This is Little Snot Dudley, who will be on the show here in a little bit. Before we get to that, make sure you subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform. We're available on all of them, so make sure you subscribe to us there, so that you do not miss an episode. And if the option is there to give a rating and a review, please do so, because that helps us in that algorithm. And when people are listening to other wrestling podcasts, we come up as a suggested listen. You can also follow us on social media. The podcast is available on Twitter or X, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads as ECW Pod. You can follow me personally on Twitter at The Dave Dynasty. And be sure to subscribe to my YouTube channel. It is youtube.com/TheDaveDynasty. All of my podcasts are on there, as well as lots of classic wrestling and many other things. And the best way that you can support this show is to buy a shirt. Go to tinyurl.com/ECWPodShirt and buy one of the This Is Extreme shirts. Now, before we get to that interview with Snot Dudley, let's talk about a few bits of news and history segments. This falls into the time period between this episode and the next one we will release. So this is from October 11th through October 24th. On October 11th, 1967, Taz was born. On October 13th, 1963, Don Callis, a.k.a. Cyrus, was born. On October 16th, 1973, Justin Credible was born. On October 16th, 1997, Bam Bam Bigelow defeated Shane Douglas to win the ECW World title. On October 18, 1997, Little Guido and Tracy Smothers defeated John Kronos and New Jack to win the ECW Tag Team titles. And on October 24, 1998, the Dudley Boys defeated Rob Van Dam and Sabu to win the ECW Tag Team titles. So there you go. There's just a few historical dates that fall into this time period between episodes. We hope you enjoyed that. Like I said, if you follow us on social media, I'm all the time posting these things with pictures and title changes, birthdays, etc. So follow us there for more of this over time. So let's take a quick break. And like I said, when we come back, we'll have the interview with one of the three original Dudley brothers, Little Snot Dudley. Be sure to follow This Is Extreme on all social media platforms. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for ECW Pod. Be sure to follow us, keep up to date, and join in the discussions. We want to hear your feedback, so find us on all the social media platforms and join the revolution. This is
extreme. All right, we're back on This Is Extreme, and we will now be joined by one of the original Dudleys, one of the original trio with Dudley Dudley and Big Dick Dudley. My guest is Little Snot Dudley, or as the world knows him, Anthony LaMonaco. Anthony, how are you?
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm all right. I'm glad you're on. You're one of the, like I said, one of the original three Dudleys. That's a pretty cool thing. It's something I want to talk about. And you didn't have a long run in ECW, but it was an impactful one. But before we get there, let's start out. I always ask everybody first off, how did you become a fan of professional wrestling?
Oh, now you're going to make me sound old, man. I started watching it in the 70s, man, and I was going to Madison Square Garden to see Pedro Morales and Bob Backlund and Snuka and all of those guys. So, you know, and then Georgia Championship Wrestling, of course. So I've been watching it a long time, man. It's just something I always loved.
Yeah. So who trained you? When did you decide you wanted to do this thing, and where did you go to get trained, and how did you get your start?
Well, how long you got, man?
Long as you need.
All right. Basically, man, I watched it, you know, I watched it through the 80s. I didn't even think about becoming a professional wrestler. And then, I was working at a place in Long Island, and a guy started working at this guy, Jim Flynn, and he was like, hey, man, I'm going to this wrestling convention. Do you want to work security? And I'm like, yeah, sure. Why not? You know, I had long hair at the time and, you know, I was a big dude. So he said, you can't get paid, but, you know, you get to hang out with guys. So, you know, first day there, I'm sitting there with Captain Lou Albano and Kerry Von Erich's there and a bunch of guys there. And people from local promotions just were like, dude, why don't you become a wrestler? And I was like, I don't know. And I spoke with Tim Horner, who was there with Smoky Mountain Wrestling, just started out. And man, he was like the only guy that I felt like wasn't just giving me a load of crap. So, you know, I thought about it. And 6 months later, I packed my bags and moved to Tennessee. And I was the first student at the Smoky Mountain Wrestling School. So Tim Horner trained me, but there were a lot of guys, man, that I was able to work with, you know, the Rock and Roll Express, and Tom Pritchard was down there, and Tracy Smothers, Dirty White Boy, all of those guys, man, really, you know, helped me out.
Yeah, I love Smoky Mountain Wrestling. It's a they get some good stuff. With that, the convention, was that, I don't know, I'm just shooting, was that one of John Arezzi's stills?
Yes, he was in Queens, absolutely.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I know he did some big stuff, did a lot of conventions, really kind of kept a lot of stuff alive there in the area. So when you went to Smoky Mountain, I don't want to talk about Smoky Mountain a lot because this is an ECW podcast, but how much did you interact with Jim Cornette? Do you have any Cornette stories?
Yeah. I was there. I was there for a lot. I was actually there for the car incident with,
The Dairy Queen.
No, not Dairy Queen. I do have that on VHS though.
Oh,
I do have that recording. Jericho and them were in the car with him at that point. I do have that on VHS somewhere, but no, the incident where he smashed up Casey's windows and stuff. I was there for that. I tried to hide for it because I really didn't want to be a witness to anything, but it was But you know, listen, Jim. I learned a lot just from being around that guy, man. I mean, one of the smartest minds in the business. And if you just sit back and watch, man, I mean, it definitely, you know, brought out my love for tag team wrestling.
Yeah.
Just being around him and, you know, all of those guys. So,
yeah. I love Cornette. I know a lot of people. I mean, it's, you know, he's a divisive guy. I know it seems like you either love him or hate him, but I don't think anybody can argue his knowledge, and especially of history and of the business. I mean, just to hear him talk, he's got the mind.
Yeah.
So you trained and worked at Smoky Mountain. So when did you come to ECW and how did that move happen?
Okay. Taz came down to Smoky Mountain Wrestling. This was before I started working. I was just training. And they paired him up with Kevin Sullivan. So The first bump that I ever took in a wrestling ring, I was working security. Taz and Kevin Sullivan were beating some guy up. They had me come in to put the guy on a stretcher. And then they both jumped me and beat me up. So because Taz was from Long Island, I was from Long Island, they said, hey, why don't you make the shows with him? Just travel around so he doesn't have to drive by himself. So, you know, we got to talking and everything. And, you know, he was like, you're in a great situation. You have no idea how lucky you are to be around, you know, these guys. And, you know, a few years went by and I guess they came up with this, you know, the gimmick, like the Hanson brothers from the Slapshot movie.
Yeah.
And, my tag team partner at the time sent ECW a tape of him wrestling me. And I guess Paulie, you know, saw that and was like, hey man, who's that guy? And Taz said, I know that guy. He's down in Tennessee. So, and I was on the road at the time. So they were calling my house looking for me. And when I got back on like a Thursday, you know, Paul was like, hey, can you be up here Saturday night? And I was like, well, if I got to start walking tomorrow, I'll be up there Saturday night. So, yeah.
So what, before we switch, what name and gimmick were you using down at Smoky Mountain?
I was just wrestling as Anthony Michaels. We were doing some stuff. Cornette came up with the idea to put me and my tag team partner under hoods. We were the Infernos down there in Smoky Mountain Wrestling. So it gave us an opportunity to wrestle as heels and people not know who we were.
Yeah.
Which was great because, you know, we got to wrestle Jericho and Lance like the first month that they came in. And, you know, we got to work 15, 16, you know, times a month because of it. So,
yeah. So I'm sure, I mean, you're probably glad to get to go back home, your home area, and work up there. So you showed up for ECW, right? You said Saturday, you made it there.
Yep.
So did they approach you right then and there and give you the Dudley idea? How did that come about? I mean, how did they approach you about that?
Well, he told me over the phone. I actually, when I finally got on the phone with Paul, we spoke for about an hour or so. And, you know, he told me, he said, you need to go buy overalls. You need to go buy a tie-dye shirt. You know, you need to go buy some glasses and put some tape on it. And, you know, for me, I mean, I was a huge fan of, I played hockey my whole life. So, you know, the Slapshot movie, as soon as he said the Hanson brothers, I was like, all right, yeah, this is going to be fun. So, and that was it. And then the night we came in, they I guess the angle was already in motion with, you know, Raven and Stevie Richards and Dreamer and those guys. And everybody just, you know, was real helpful and just wanted to get the angle over. So, and do whatever they could just to keep things moving. So it was different than Smoky Mountain Wrestling. But the locker room to me was the same. That like it was just everybody just cared about the product so much. So, you know, so when I got in, I mean, it was pretty easy to figure out.
Yeah. So did they already have the snot thing? I mean, is that when you came in? Yes. Did they know that was
He told me over the phone.
Now, sorry,
if there was ever going to be anything to deter me from coming up, it was like great. You know, am I going to make my big break in this business? It's little snot Dudley. This is like, you know, it's going to be fantastic. But I dug it because I understood the business and, you know, I was like, let's just do it. Whatever, man. You know?
Yeah. So did they, obviously, I mean, there's little snot Dudley, right? I mean, the acronym LSD, did that ever come up? Was that intentional? I mean, I'm sure there had to be intent. I mean, did he ever say anything about that or why they did that?
That did not come up, but years later, after I had already like not done the gimmick anymore, I thought about like doing tie-dye t-shirts with LSD on it and, and, you know, and running with the whole thing. And it was like, man, why didn't I think of that? Like, I didn't put two and two together at first. I mean, it's quite possible, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like our Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds kind of thing.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if we can even try to figure out the way Paul Heyman thinks sometimes, man, because he feels like he's just got ideas flowing and he just comes up with so much great stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I don't know if you know, but I've always been curious, were there other Dudley ideas come up and discussed that were never gotten used? Do you know if that ever came up? Did you guys ever sit around or Paul ever come around and say, oh, you know what we need? We need this Dudley. And it just never happened or.
No, I think that all started when, you know, when I got injured. So I think they were just trying to, you know, fill the gap at the time. Because when I first, you know, when I first got injured, Taz said, how long you need? And I said, I don't know, probably like a month. So I think that was kind of just it in the meantime. And then I never got back. So,
yeah. We'll get to that. So it was your idea that it was just for what you thought, it was just intended to be the trio for a while. There was no talks of it being this big thing until after you were gone.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, no one mentioned it to me. I mean, it was going to be us three and, you know, I was going to be the dude that got his ass whooped, you know, the little brother and you know, Dudley Jeff was going to be like the more intelligent one. And of course, you know, Alex Big Dick Dudley was just, you know, going to be the guy that just pounded people.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about your Dudley brothers. Let's talk about Dudley. Like you said, he's kind of the leader, kind of the speaker. I always said he was the only true Dudley because his mom and dad were both Dudleys. Everything else. He was a really good talker, man. He really got the group over pretty well. Tell me some of your memories of working with him.
Not only did I get to work with Jeff up there, but he's from the Tampa area down here in Florida. So afterwards, I actually we teamed up a couple of times. Real smart, you know, real confident, which helped me out because I really didn't know what to expect, you know, coming from Smoky Mountain Wrestling. You know, I remember when I first got up there, you know, Paul had said to me, I said, what do you need me to do tonight? And he was like, just sell like Ricky Morton. But, you know, whereas Jeff Dudley was a lot more aggressive out there, I hadn't gotten to that point yet because coming from down south in the Southern wrestling, everything was a little bit lighter and not so physical.
Yeah.
So he was good at that. He was better at that. And I could kind of watch and see, and it kind of gave me a little bit more confidence. And then that everybody else telling me, dude, please kick me in the head. Don't just, So I was like, okay.
And like we said, you weren't there real long. I mean, if I remember right, a lot of what you did was tag matches with Dudley, right? I mean, you and him worked a lot of tag matches.
Yep. Yeah. We worked with the Pit Bulls. We did one show, I think, or it was a six man where with Cactus Jack out there. We did some stuff, you know, against Dreamer, teaming up with them as well.
Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about some intense guys. What about the Pitbulls? I mean, man, they were, I mean, were they stiff in the ring? Were they I'm snug, want to make it look good?
Yeah, but again, these were guys that like took care of you out there. I think like what reminded me back in when I was down south, I went to USWA for a little while and I worked with the Eliminators.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And that was the first time that I ever like really got like, holy crap, man, I just got the crap beat out of me in the ring, but like not in a bad way. Like it was just so physical.
Yeah.
You know, and I wasn't used to it. So by the time I got up there, the Pit Bulls, I was like, you know, I was like, okay, like I know what to expect now, you know, and just like, you know, Saturn and Kronos took care of me down there. These guys took care of me as well. So it wasn't anything freaky, anything scary. I mean, we did manage to take out a wall on my first night there. So.
Well, all right. Now let's talk about Big Dick Dudley. Cause of course, like you said, he's the big guy, the big intimidator, just didn't say a lot, growled, you know, kind of kept everybody in check, but everything I've heard, everybody I've ever talked to, man, said it behind the scenes. He was such a nice, sweet guy. Tell me about him.
He was a great guy, but I will tell you this, if you ever want to see your life flash before your eyes, drive from Long Island to Philadelphia with that guy. Because, oh my God, however long it takes, 2.5 hours, whatever, when I tell you we probably got there in like an hour and a half up on, up on the shoulders and in and out. I was like, this is supposed to be my big break. Please just get me, you know, just get me to the building. But yeah, awesome dude. Like, you know, definitely not just because he's a big dude, but he's a good dude. The kind of guy you know would have your back in any situation. So yeah, he was good. I didn't get to spend a whole heck of a lot of time with him, but you know, it was sad to hear him pass.
Yeah, yeah, and everybody always talks about the specialness, and you mentioned it just a little bit. The specialness in ECW. Could you feel that? I mean, it became this very special, magical thing. Could you feel that uniqueness? And that's starting to develop when you were there.
It was absolutely a team atmosphere. It was, I mean, nobody knew me from a hole in the wall, you know, and I'm working the angle with, you know, Dreamer and Raven, and they both took me aside and, you know, really spelled it out for me. So I had an understanding. It was important to them that the angle got over. It was important to them that the show got over. You know, the fans were everything to all those guys back there. You know, I don't think there was anybody back there that was, you know, just looking to, you know, screw around or whatever. Everybody was there with a purpose, and everybody had each other's back. Everybody watched each other's matches. It was definitely a very, very cool atmosphere. And I appreciate that, you know, for the short time I was there. And then even afterwards, when I would run into those guys, you know, they still treated me like, you know, like I had been there for years.
Yeah, talk to me just a little bit about Raven, right? Because everyone talks about Scott, you know, Scott Levy. How obviously they say he's got a genius level IQ, this amazing mind for the business. Could you see that in whatever interactions you had, the intelligence, the vision that he had for wrestling?
Absolutely. I mean, you could just see the intensity. You know, I didn't really have like a normal conversation with him. Everything was wrestling based.
Yeah.
But you know, I learned early to just sit back and kind of watch and learn. You know, and as you watch the matches unfold and the things he did and his psychology and everything. But, you know, somebody like him is thinking 2 months ahead, you know, whereas a lot of people that you work with are just worried about that night, getting the match over that night. Whereas, you know, they'll slow things down and you'll watch it just unfold. And then when it finally unfolds, it's even better.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and you hear guys like Raven, Dreamer, Taz, who were kind of the locker room leaders at that time. I mean, who was the guy that if you screwed up would you know rip your ass a little bit, or you know would put you in place, or who were those locker room leaders?
I think Tommy Dreamer was. You know, Taz was real helpful for me because, you know, I knew him.
Yeah.
So, you know, I could kind of lean on him a little bit. I went from a situation at Smoky Mountain Wrestling where I was like the little brother to everybody. And then now it was like, I didn't really know anybody. So I kind of looked to him. But I remember the first night I was in the televised match where we did the run in afterwards, and we went back out on stage and broke some tables up and stuff. And I went back down off the stage and they were like, go back. and they went to swing a chair at me, but where they were standing from up there and I was down low, I was definitely going to get the corner of the chair in my head. I put my hand up.
Oh,
and that, man. And that's the only thing that I can remember of ever getting crap for was like, dude, what'd you put your hand up for? I was like, I don't know, like 50 stitches my first night in. I don't know, man. You know, so I'm like, okay. So I knew from whatever anybody grabbed, whether it was an ironing board or whatever, that I was just going to take it and deal with it. So.
Yeah. And I know, you know, people have a lot of opinions about Tommy Dreamer and whatnot, but no one could say there was anybody more dedicated to ECW. I mean, he rode that thing all the way to the end and it was completely dedicated, did what he could to keep it afloat. Were you seeing that even in those early days, how this guy was the company guy, the guy that just heart and soul was in ECW?
Absolutely. What I liked about him is he was honest. You know, years later, after I had left, I did a bunch of shows. We went over to Peru and Amy was there, Lita.
Yeah.
She was doing the Angelica gimmick. I think that's what the name she was doing, something like that.
Yeah.
And she was like, listen, we're going to be in Daytona. You know, if you want to get back in ECW, why don't you come up and, you know, talk to them. And so I went up there. I made the trip. I had talked to Lance Storm and he was like, yeah, you know, come on up. So I went up there and, you know, Tommy was honest with me. It was like right near the end. And he said, listen, dude, you know, we'll put you on the shows, but you know, there's no money right now. So, you know, I was 30 years old maybe, and I had to make a decision, you know, so I obviously didn't do it because I was kind of civilized at the time, you know, I had a job and was actually paying my bills at that point in my life. So
yeah, you were civilian.
I appreciated it. I mean, he could have bullshitted me and said, hey dude, you know, come on, let's do it. Let's, you know, resurrect the gimmick or something, you know, but
yeah. So you're telling me that late in the ECW days, there could have been, if situations were a little different, there could have been a little Snot Dudley returned to ECW.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't get that far.
But the potential was there. There was a whisper,
yeah,
at least, right?
Yeah, and Devon and Bubba had already left for WWE. They were already up there. So
yeah. Was Spike still there?
No, I think Spike went up too.
He was already gone? Yeah.
He wasn't on that Daytona show, so.
Yeah.
You know, it was like Balls Mahoney, who I had lived with down in Smoky Mountain, and bunch of other guys at that time.
Yeah, talk to me about Balls Mahoney, because man, that's another dude I think is underappreciated, and a guy that you never hear a negative thing about him. And I mean, of course, you said Smoky Mountain, he was doing the Boo Bradley thing down there, I think.
Yeah.
What was Balls like?
I love the dude, man. It was me, him, and D-Lo at the time, and you know, this was the whole Smoky Mountain flop house where New Jack was staying with us and Mustafa was staying with us. But and I just, you know, we traveled a lot together, me and John and, you know, Balls and D-Lo. It's just always fun, man. Always a good dude, man. You know, a little bit of a calamity, so to speak.
Yeah.
But you know, we always had a good time, man. We, you know, the house was always fun. You know, the shows were always fun. You know, he was always good at, you know, laughing at yourself, which you need to do in this business. You know, you need to be able to poke fun at yourself and stuff like that. But also, man, that dude, he was serious about what he did. I know there was some incidents with him, you know, up in WWE and stuff like that. But
yeah,
I didn't get that, man. There's a lot of people in this business, you know, that I got to work with that I loved, that I heard other stories about. And like, nah, man,
yeah,
they were cool with me. I mean, listen, Bruiser Bedlam stayed with us.
Yeah.
You know, I got to work with Candido and Tammy. I never had any problem with Tammy. That, you know, loved Bruiser. So it's like, you know, all the weird stuff that goes on outside, that wasn't my relationship with these people.
Yeah, you know? I think it's such a wacky business. I think some of these guys just, they don't fit that corporate structure, right? When they get up there, it's just a different world. And maybe they don't, you know, I don't know, it's a different world. So maybe, you know, it brings out a different side of them. Now,
yeah.
I don't know the timeline in ECW, but when you were there, was the Travel Lodge thing, was that a deal yet?
No, I don't think so.
Most
of the stuff that we did, I wasn't staying over. It was only like once a week for me.
Okay. Gotcha. So,
we would just go in and, you know, and going back home that same night and stuff. So I didn't.
Okay. So, well, Tell me a kind of a wacky or fun ECW story. We're not trying to bury anybody. We're not trying to break up any marriages or anything like that. But so it doesn't have to be too, you know, risque if you don't want. But tell me, what's something that, I don't know, just something fun, a locker room story or something that maybe people haven't heard?
I don't know if I really have anything like that. I mean, the first night in, they the Rotten Brothers were doing the fist in the glass. I don't know if was the first time they had tried that, but I think for me, the bizarre thing was like walking in and knowing that there was like EMT on site. You know, I hadn't really experienced that. I don't remember how much longer after that the whole New Jack thing went down. With him and that kid.
Yeah, the mass transit thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't, you know, like I said, I really didn't get a chance to stick around long enough and, you know, hang out and party like I did in other territories and stuff like that.
So, yeah. Yeah. So tell me about the ECW arena? What was the vibe like there? I mean, there's some notorious, I mean, some of the front row fans became just as notorious as some of the wrestlers. What was the feel like and the vibe like in that building working?
Unbelievable. I mean, that's what you want as a wrestler. You know, I've wrestled in front of 200 people that didn't care you were there, and I've wrestled in front of 50 people that were so into it that it felt like, you know, it was 5,000 people there. Yeah. So to go there, I mean, we walked in the ring and they were chanting old time hockey, you know, which was awesome. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think the match that we had with Mick Foley and them, you would just stick your hand out and somebody was like giving you something to hit somebody with. And I remember like reaching back and I grabbed something and I had to look back. It was like a plastic dinosaur or something like that. And I was like, all right, you know, and they just looked at me like, go ahead, hit me with it. I was like, all right. So, you know, it was interesting, but probably the best crowds that I've ever been in front of. Absolutely, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the crowds, they're kind of, they changed the direction of wrestling, right? They became more involved in the show than, you know, what guys had before. And I mean, that's kind of, you know, where it's gone to, you know, even today with, you know, the chants and different things, a lot of that, the roots are there in ECW.
It might be where the intelligent wrestling fan started. Yeah. Like the absolutely. You know, letting you know when you screwed up, you know, cheering, you know, you busting your ass out there. So,
yeah. Yeah. And I think Paul was very intelligent to that, right? That they had a crowd, maybe that was reading some of the dirt sheets and a little more knowledgeable. And I think he knew, right, to book a little bit to that, to work that a little bit in his favor. And you know, and sometimes, you know, even the intelligent guys, he was smart enough to work them a little bit and knew how to pull the strings.
Yeah. But you watch guys that didn't normally work that way that came in and they changed their style or they tried to adapt to it. And that was cool to see.
Yeah.
You know? Especially when you talk about, you know, Stone Cold stepping in there kind of,
oh yeah,
you know, started that whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, you could definitely feel that vibe, you know, from the crowd making these guys, you know, work a little bit differently.
Yeah.
You know, and it was interesting for me to see guys, you know, like even remember, you know, watching Tracy Smothers go up there.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, here was a guy, you know, swinging the Confederate flag and just, you know, they loved him down south. And now he's up there with the Italian gimmick.
Yeah.
And, you know, just catching the whole Northern vibe. I mean, it was definitely a great scene.
Yeah, yeah. Who would have thought that Tracy Smothers and Tommy Rich would have got over in the North with an Italian gimmick?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's just crazy.
Yeah, but that's ECW. So we mentioned it earlier. It said, you know, you were injured. What happened with the injury there? How'd that happen?
They were scheduled to go down to Florida, and at the time I was like, okay, you know, do I go down? How do I figure this out? And Paul had said to me, he said, listen, TV hasn't aired. I guess they were like 3 weeks behind down in Florida. He said, just stay back for this. And, you know, and then whatever, we'll catch up next week. So that weekend, you know, back on Long Island, I'm hanging out with my friends and, you know, we're down at the beach on Long Island and we're on a wave runner and I'm on the back of the wave runner and like this party boat comes by and like this, I hear my buddy go, oh shit. And I'm like, oh shit, what? This giant wave came and it threw me off the back of the wave runner. And when I went into the water, I had my vest on and everything. I went in head first, but my legs kept going and I shifted my pelvic bone. So I didn't think anything of it at the time, but I couldn't even get back on the wave runner. I was like trying to pull myself. He had to tow me back because I couldn't pull myself back on. It's like for the next 2 days, I was staying at a friend's house. I was just laying on his bedroom floor. Like that was the only comfortable spot.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what do I do? Like, there's no way that I'm going to be able to go back and, you know, get, you know, super bombed off the top rope,
yeah.
you know, at this point. Like, so, you know, I had spoke with my mom who was down in Florida and, you know, she was like, well, come down here, see a chiropractor and we'll get you back up to speed. And so, you know, when I finally got in touch with Taz, I mean, it was tough too, because this wasn't the days of cell phones.
So, yeah.
you know, you're calling, you're leaving messages, you're leaving phone numbers. But by the time I got in touch with him, he was like, all right, just let me know how it is. So I think I went to like the chiropractor like every day, just trying to get it right. And then I took a match down here in Florida to see how I felt. And the match itself went great. And I was running and bumping. And the next day when I got up, I was like, crap, I don't think I could do this. So it wound up taking me, God, about maybe 6 to 8 months to feel good enough to actually wrestle on a consistent level. But it took me years for that discomfort to kind of go away. So, but you know, 6 to 8 months later, I didn't even want to ask, to be honest with you, about yeah. going back. You know,
yeah.
it was like, I screwed that up unintentionally, but you know, it yeah. is what it is.
Yeah. I mean, you know, yeah, it happens. I mean, so, you were out, you told them you're going to be out for a while, right? Six to 8 months, like you said, they'd moved on. I mean, the Dudleys had evolved a lot during that time.
Yeah.
And so you just didn't get back in touch and, you know, I mean, they never called you. It was just kind of an assumed thing out.
That well, no.
Everybody's
no,
moved on.
I talked to them after that match and I told them that I wasn't coming. I told them I wasn't coming back.
Okay.
You know, that I couldn't.
Yeah.
I wanted to, but I couldn't. So.
Yeah. So then after that, like you said, you didn't feel right, you know, feel your place to get back, you know, and they never contacted you. And that was just that. Then once you recovered, that was 6 to 8 months later. That, you know, it was
yeah,
just
and then,
everybody
and
kind of moved
about,
on.
Probably about like, say it was maybe like a year or two later, you know, Bubba and Devon were in there and they, you know, they used to come down to the War Memorial in Fort Lauderdale all the time. And I would go and see him and I thanked Paul. You know, I went up to him and I said, I want to thank you for the opportunity. I'm sorry that, you know, it didn't work out the way, you know, you had planned, but I mean, you know, it worked out. It just didn't work out with me. you know,
yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, you just said you went there. Did you beat Bubba and Devon? What were they like meeting them after the fact like that?
Devon, I've met a bunch of times. You know, Devon's been at D'Lo's house. The neighborhood I live in now, I moved in there because D'Lo was living there, D'Lo Brown at the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Devon was always over there. So, you know, I got to be friends with Devon. When I would go up to Universal Studios, D'Lo would get me and my kids in there, and Devon would take pictures with my kids. Bubba, I met him like twice, but I didn't, there was not really an opportunity to, you know, we were at a wrestling show or something. We, you know, something like that. Devon, you know, because he was at D'Lo's house, we sat down and talked.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, there was a yeah. few times I had some tryouts with the WWE in 99 and 2000, and
yeah.
guys that I knew like Gangrel and stuff would, you know, would razz Devon and be like, hey, he's the original one, and I'm like, yeah, dude, he's getting paid,
yeah.
man.
Yeah. So. yeah. So did you ever run into any other guys, like, you know, DW Dudley and Chubby Dudley, sign guy? Did you ever run into those?
No.
So, I mean, did Devon, you talk about, you know, knowing Devon pretty well. Did he give you a little respect for being one of the original Dudleys? I mean, did he?
All the time.
Did he ever? Yeah.
All the time. He would even call me that. He would say, oh, original Dudley, give me a hug. And he was great, man. He was. And listen, I appreciate those guys, because if those guys didn't go out and kick ass the way they did, then, you know, we're not even, no one's even talking about me.
Yeah.
You know, to me, I always say, like, if anything from this business, I'm definitely a cool trivia question.
Yeah. You know, well, yeah. So. yeah. I mean, those guys are definitely talented. I mean, you could see, you know, Bubba Ray right from the get go. He had something, you know, he was a talent there. So I'm not trying to stir any pot, but later on when you saw the little Spike Dudley thing, did you ever think, huh, what is that? You know, I mean, did that ever, you know, kind of a little bit of a play off the younger, the little runt brother, the LSD thing? yeah. play off of you? Did you?
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not saying it. It rubbed you the wrong way, but
around like that. But
oh yeah, I don't know.
but he definitely he's been through some tables, man. I don't know if I would have took as many tables as he did. So he was probably better suited for that gig than I was. So
yeah, you might have dodged a bullet. Yeah. So you talked about how you left ECW. When you look back, I mean, again, you say you weren't there that long, but still was an impactful one of the original Dudleys. When you look back, what comes to mind most? What do you remember most about that time in ECW?
Just the opportunity that I had there and the guys that were there. There's a lot of people that didn't get to experience that. And listen, man, I appreciate everything I've done in this business, whether it was under the radar or what have you. I mean, I absolutely loved this business and I've enjoyed every part of it. So, there's, for me, I could appreciate just being able to get the opportunity to be out there. Of course, we always want more.
Yeah.
You always wish things would have went different, but I don't dwell on it, man. I'm just appreciative of, the career that I had and and the things that I got to see. I got to travel around this country, on somebody else's nickel and experience places that, some punk from Long Island, I would have never thought I would have been. So,
Yeah. But, I mean, it's easy for guys to say, what if, but you accomplished more than a lot and experienced more than a lot, the guys that dipped their toe and tried this business. Do you still have any involvement in wrestling? Ever pop into a local show and just watch, or you watch anything on TV, or have you kind of washed your hands for the most part of it?
No. I turn it on, man. I love it. I like watching it. I haven't been to, a lot of the shows. They have a great wrestling school down here that Gangrel is actually running. Yeah. Yeah. And a few of the people have asked me to like kind of pop in and stuff like that, but I know if I go down there, I'm 53 years old now. I'm actually in pretty good shape, but I know if I go down there, someone's going to say something. I'm going to be like, well, maybe I could dust them overalls off or what have you.
So. Yeah. Yeah. It's hard because like I said, I just talked to Jason Knight and, whatever his age, and he's, running shows and wrestling a little bit again. And he's like, man, just when you think you get out and just takes a little bit to suck you right back in.
It really does, man. It's like the mafia to some degree, yeah. Right? You just, you always have some kind of feel to it, I root for the guy. I root for a lot of the guys that, I saw coming up, about the same time I did or that are still out there. Of course, the older guys, guys like Jericho is still out there running around the world between his band and that. And
there's a few of those guys. Tommy Dreamer's still out there. And
yeah.
Doing some things.
Christian are running around.
So I mean, even Gangrel, you've mentioned Gangrel a few times. Man, he's still in great shape. Still pops up here from here to there. He's one of those guys that you fully expect to maybe get one little run somewhere because he still looks great. Still seems to have it on.
I think he should have definitely had a much bigger run.
Yeah,
but that's me. I know him, so I'm a little partial, but
yeah,
I don't know. It was a great gimmick and
absolutely,
and he's been a good worker for a long time, man. I think what did he win the PWI like rookie of the year, back in 90 something. Right.
So, I mean, a lot of people don't know about it. I mean, he worked, up in Canada, did a lot. I mean, he did a lot of stuff people aren't even aware of. I mean, prior to, that little bit in WWE, I mean, he's done a lot. So
which I will tell you too, which we forgot to talk about, which ties in with, when Luna was out there,
Luna's son. Yeah.
And, I knew Luna from shows and then eventually down here, but there was a point where they threw me out of the ring and Luna kicked me in the ribs. And I looked up at her and I was like, throw me back to the pit bulls. So I was like, that was the stiffest kick that I've ever gotten in my ribs in my life. We laughed about it, but I was like, holy crap. Was that somebody else? Did somebody run out of the back or something? I was like, throw me back in the ring.
Talk about a revolutionary worker, man. Luna broke. She broke so many glass ceilings and did so many things that women weren't doing. Great look, great talker. I mean, she had it all before when women were pigeonholed, and she was
cared about the business. Totally cared about, same thing. Cared about the angle, you know, I don't know a lot of the newer guys out there. I just know what I see on TV. I don't know what their mentality's like.
Yeah.
So I would hope that there's that's still going on now, that there's still that kind of pride for the business and it's not such a business.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah. So yeah. What was, it, like with Luna, you hear again, another one of those you hear behind the scenes was just a sweet girl, a sweet lady. And really kind, really nice. I mean, was that your experience with her away from,
yeah,
you know, yeah, behind the screen?
I got to spend a lot of time with, you know, with them down here in Florida. You know, they were on a lot of shows down here and she was always fun to be around. Always cool. There's a couple of incidents where I've seen her wrestle somebody and that person probably not be ready to be in the ring with her and her get fired up, but it was never for the wrong reasons. It was always because, you know, somebody screwed the match up or something like that. Like,
yeah,
she wanted everything to be, you know, good, yeah, but you know, she comes from a wrestling family. She,
absolutely. You know, yeah. One of the best wrestling family, man. The Vachons are something else. Yeah. I was in the Midwest. I grew up in the Midwest. So I'm, you know, got a lot of plenty of Mad Dog in my day. So yeah, it's good family.
Where in the Midwest?
I grew up in Indiana. Yeah. Okay. I was born and raised in Indiana. I live in North Carolina now, transfer here for work, but I spent most of my life in Indiana.
I got to wrestle over there a few times. I like the mid-south area, midwest, right?
Yeah, it's all right. If you see the right parts of it. When you live there for a while, it's like, man, there's too much corn.
I've seen some, I've seen some uninteresting parts. There were some towns we didn't stay over in. We just kept going.
Yeah, that's all right. I mean, hey, you know, we all, like I said, we all grew up in our, I mean, you know, I grew up on Dick the Bruiser. He was the hero in the Midwest, and everybody had a Bruiser story. I mean, it's like back in the day, that was wherever you grew up, you know, you had your local guys that were your heroes. So. But do you have any way that fans can follow you and what you're doing, or do you kind of not really keep a public profile anymore?
I don't, man. I mean, I have a Facebook account, you know, as you know, and an Instagram account, but the Instagram account is my business. So, you know, I'm basically chasing, you know, my kids around. My son's 22 and he's in a band.
He plays
drums.
Plug that a little bit. I saw you put a post out there that they had a single come out on Spotify. Yo, plug his band a little bit. Let's talk, you know, tell us about that a little.
They've only been playing together a few months, but they sound great. The single is called Avalanche and the name of the band is Dust Supply, and it's hashtag Dust Supply Music. You know, they're starting to play out around here. I mean, you know, I grew up playing in a band and the music scene was great in the 80s. So they're, you know, they're trying to play wherever. I mean, it's like no music scene anymore.
Nah, it's all different.
So they're out there, man. And it sounds good. And I think they're going to like slowly drop a different song. They did like a 5-song EP, but the full EP is going to come out, I want to say November, but in the meantime, like once a week, they're going to like do a show, drop a song on Spotify. And, you know, for three guys that been together a few months, man, they sound great, man. I love to see them. I mean, I'm a big, you know, big metal head. It's very, you know, 90s kind of metal thing. Uh-huh. And, you know, and listen, I'm not saying this cause he's my son, but it's a kick ass drummer, dude. He's really good. I mean, the band's good, but.
Yeah,
I'm partial to my son. So.
Of course. Yeah, but there you go. I mean, anybody listen to this, you know, obviously an ECW fan, so obviously a fan of that 90s metal. I mean, that played a big part in ECW, so there you go. And not only that, but there's a little Dudley lineage in that band, so everybody go check them out.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, tell him to do a gig sometime with the taped up glasses just to pay a little homage to his dad.
Well, he's got long hair too, so
there you go.
He could probably pull it off.
There you go, drummer Dudley. That's what it is. All right, well, hey, Anthony, thanks for coming on talking to us again. Like I said, you know, a lot of people like you mentioned, a lot of people you don't remember Snot Dudley as much because you weren't there, you know, a super long time in ECW. You know, it was the early, you know, earlier days, but you were one of the original Dudley, so it's a very prominent, very important part of that group. So thanks for coming on. Thanks for talking to us, you know, about your career, your time in ECW, your time in Smoky Mountain and all you got. And like I said, everybody go check out your son's band. And and you know, who knows, man, maybe you can get out and do a little conventions here and there and you know, never know. Snot Dudley can sign a few pictures. You never know.
There you go, man. I appreciate it, man. I appreciate your time, too.
Support This Is Extreme and buy the This Is Extreme shirt. Show the world that you are part of the revolution and that you support our podcast and the history of ECW. Go to tinyurl.com/ECW pod shirt and buy yours today.
All right, and thank you to Anthony for coming on, Little Snot Dudley. Thank you for coming on and doing that interview. We will be back in 2 weeks with another episode of This Is Extreme. We hope you enjoyed this. We hope you will subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and follow us on all those social media platforms that I mentioned earlier. Make sure you also go out, like I said, and follow us and subscribe to us on YouTube. And go out and buy a This Is Extreme t-shirt at tinyurl.com/ECW pod shirt. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. Make sure you keep on doing what you do. Join the revolution. And wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep it extreme.